Anything good needs a little editing, right? I'm Daniela Fierro, producer of Vermont Edition. We've edited this podcast for clarity and brevity. Thanks for listening to our show.
If you or a family member are one of the millions of Americans who take antidepressants, some recent headlines might have caught your eye. Earlier this month, President Donald Trump issued an executive order calling for a study of antidepressants and antipsychotics and their effects on children. He established a commission called Make America Healthy Again to study childhood chronic disease, including mental health disorders. Why this focus? Well, part of it comes from the new Secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. He's been critical of antidepressants in the past. Here he is being questioned by Senator Tina Smith of Minnesota during his Senate confirmation hearing on January 29th.
Listen, I know people, including members of my family, who've had a much worse time getting off of SSRIs than they did than people have getting off of heroin. Well, it's the withdrawal period is, I mean, and it's written on the label.
Here to help us better understand the use of this class of drugs known as SSRIs is Dr. Stephen Schlossman. He's the chief of child psychiatry at the University of Vermont Medical Center in Burlington. Prior to that, he worked with Dartmouth Medical Center, Harvard Medical School, and Mass General in Boston. Welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thanks very much for having me.
And listeners, we're glad to have you this hour as well, and would love to hear your thoughts on this topic we're discussing today. Perhaps your child takes an SSRI. What was the diagnosis? Have you noticed a change in their behavior, or do you have questions about this medication's use? You can give us a call at 800-639-2211 or send us an email to vermontedition@vermontpublic.org. All right, let's begin at the beginning here. What exactly are SSRIs and what are they used to treat?
So SSRIs are the abbreviation for selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. It's probably not the best name for them because they're less selective than the name sounds. So some folks call them SRIs too. They're a class of both antidepressants, and they're also approved for anti-anxiety. So they're used to treat major depressive disorder, a host of anxiety disorders, obsessive-compulsive disorder, which some folks will classify as an anxiety disorder, as well as some less known about conditions like perimenopausal depression and depression associated with menstrual cycles.
Hmm. And what are some of the brand names of these medications that people might recognize?
Sure. So they'll probably recognize the first one, which came out in or was approved in 87. That's fluoxetine is the generic. So the brand name is Prozac for that. That's the famous one. There was the book Listening to Prozac, which came out in the end of the, I guess, the early 1990s. Other ones are paroxetine or Paxil. That's the one that the black box warning was assigned to initially, now established for all of them. Sertraline, Zoloft, and we could go on. There's actually a lot of them on the market.
Mm. The black box warning, what is that?
So that was a warning applied. It's there now for all antidepressants, but it was first applied for paroxetine and then expanded to the other SSRIs. It's a United States warning, so the FDA put it on there. It was done in response to a concern that the SSRIs led to an increase in suicidal thinking. There were no reported suicides in the studies that happened, but it was scary to think that it might promote thoughts of harming oneself. Since then, there's been a lot of criticism of that finding. It's not mentioned as much as it used to be mentioned for that reason, but it's still something that it's important to let patients know about.
Mm. Yeah, we'll talk about some of the side effects and possible concerns in just a moment. But first, you said that fluoxetine, the first of these drugs, came about in 1987. So these have been around for a while.
Yeah, they've really withstood a bit of the test of time, especially with fluoxetine. And almost all of them have been around for at least a decade or more.
Hmm. And just one more point of clarification here while we're defining our terms.
Sure.
The drugs were discussing right now, SSRIs, this class of antidepressants, these are separate from antipsychotics, some of which the FDA has approved for use in children and adolescents as well.
That's correct. Yep.
Okay. All right. So you're a child psychiatrist, which means that you could prescribe medications like the ones that we're talking about today. Over the course of your career, have you noticed a shift in how the uses of these, not just among your fellow psychiatrists, but also an increase in the parents or kids who are asking you about them?
Sure. Yeah, no, they're definitely a part of the cultural discourse right now, which means that they're on TV shows, they're on radio advertisements. Certainly primary care doctors have become more comfortable prescribing them. They're a whole lot safer than the kinds of antidepressants that we had prior to the SSRIs. Those were the tricyclic antidepressants. Mm-hmm. They're equally as effective as the tricyclics, but the tricyclics have a very narrow therapeutic margin, which means that you have to really be careful with the dose, and you take even slightly more than the dose, you can have some pretty awful side effects.
Mm. Okay, so those were used for children and teens prior to the development of these?
Yeah, but much less commonly because of that profile.
Okay. Well, if you have questions about this class of drugs, these antidepressants that we're talking about, particularly their use with children and teens, we have the chief of child psychiatry at UVMMC here with us today, Dr. Steven Schlossman. You can call in at 800-639-2211. Let's go to the phones now. We have David in Wilmington on the line. David, go ahead.
Yeah, hi.
Hey.
I have a comment and a question.
Sure.
First of all, I think these drugs are dangerous. I think it's extremely dangerous to be giving them to children and teenagers. And I would also like the doctor to address the drugs known as Effexor, Effexor XR, and Pristique.
Mm. Thank you, David.
Sure.
Are you familiar with those?
Yeah, yeah. So to address the first issue,
sure.
There is a feeling that these medicines are dangerous for kids. It is not borne out by the information that's out there. I understand the worry. I think it's a big deal to put a kid on a medicine, and none of us are in a big rush to do that unless it's needed. And then if it's needed, it's really awful not to have that medicine available. And needed is a decision that's made by a whole lot of different folks, which include the kids, the parents, the doctors, the prescribers, the teachers. It's a community effort, and I think that's an important thing that we might lose track of when we worry about the safety profile. But having said that, I'm happy to think out loud with folks about what their worries are. The other medicines that the gentleman mentioned are in a different class of the selective and norepinephrine reuptake inhibitors, the SNRIs. So they block the reuptake of both serotonin, which is one kind of transmitter or neurotransmitter, and norepinephrine, which is another kind of neurotransmitter.
Mm. Well, thank you, David, for calling in. I'm curious to hear more about what you were just saying, Doctor, about the importance of a community in deciding whether or not a child or teenager should go on one of these drugs that we're discussing. Because it sounds like maybe a vision of our culture and our medical practices that doesn't quite exist yet, where everybody's coming together to discuss holistically the health of one child.
Yeah, boy. from your mouth to some higher power's ears, as my Uncle Maury would say. It's super important. Being depressed or having some kind of psychiatric challenge, psychiatric illness, it's real different than, say, wheezing from asthma. Wheezing from asthma is a very big deal, but it's going to look the same no matter where you are, no matter what context you're in, no matter what your age is. You might complain about it differently. You might say, I can't breathe in a different way when you're older than when you're younger. Whereas feeling depressed is really a function of a cultural milieu. And by that, I mean the folks who are around you, your teachers, your coaches, your parents. Because of that, it's going to take the teachers, the coaches, the parents, and not in that order, probably parents and the kid, most importantly, first of all, to tell you whether they're feeling differently now than they were feeling. It's not going to end there because sometimes you're not able to see it in yourself, so then you're going to turn to other sources. That's why the job is really hard. It's great. I love the work, but it's very nuanced.
Yeah. We just got a question via email from a listener named Elizabeth in Weybridge who writes, is weight gain a side effect of these antidepressants over time? I have a family member who has been on a medication for many years since age 15 and has gained a lot of weight over that time. Is there a connection?
Yeah. Well, I don't know if there's a connection for the family member. There's definitely a connection between folks who take some of the SSRIs, and it varies among SSRIs, and it also varies from person to person.
Mm.
But there is an association with weight gain. It's usually manageable with diet, with exercise, all the things that we do to manage weight. But it is an issue, and again, you have to watch for it. It's a big issue, as you can imagine, with kids, especially teenagers, because you don't want them to have to deal with another stressor. Mm. So it's something you look into. Having said that, for this family member, there might be other things that are causing the weight gain, and if you assume that it's from the medicines, you might be missing the other thing, too. So you got to look into it.
Mm. Thank you for the question, Elizabeth. If you have questions, you can always email us at vermontedition@vermontpublic.org, as well as with your thoughts about this conversation we're having today. Dr. Schlossman, in 2023, I just read this stat recently, and it really really surprised me. In 2023, 40% of high school students who were surveyed by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, said they persistently felt hopeless or sad in the past year, and 9% had attempted suicide. But that's remarkable and, yeah. and heartbreaking, no yeah. matter what way you look at it. What are some of the causes of this mental health crisis, as many people have termed it, that we've seen kind of on the rise in the last few years?
I'm just chuckling because it is the question, and it's a hard one to answer in a succinct way.
Sure.
Because life has gotten very complicated. So I can sort of spitball with you and think about it, and then I'm happy to think more about it out loud at a future time. Life is stressful right now. It's not that it wasn't stressful in the past, but in some ways it's more stressful. Kids are worried about a lot of things. They're worried about the climate, for one thing. They're worried about, they're more plugged in than you think, especially teenagers. So they're aware of what's going on both in their nation and also across the world. There's that. There's the added emphasis of the internet and all of the good the internet brings you, but also it's hard. It's never not there. So you can always communicate with your friends in real time. You don't really get a break from it. And if you do take a break, you worry that somebody else isn't taking a break. So you have this fear of missing out, basically. So you've got this constant presence of the things that cause stress. And then you add to that the potentially, at least, the increased isolative behavior of kids that comes with the technology. And I'm not in a big mood to demonize the technology because I think it does a lot of good too, but I think we're still adjusting as a culture, and especially with kids, to how we can work with this technology to maximally help us and not to harm us.
Mm. So when you are meeting with, say, a teenager in this case, who has presented these feelings to you, they're feeling hopeless, they're feeling sad, perhaps they've even attempted suicide. What is the process for you as a psychiatrist in determining whether or not you might want to prescribe an SSRI?
That's a great question. So first of all, it's not a quick process and not an easy process. You're going to spend some time talking to the kid. I mean, one of the benefits of our current time is that we've decreased the stigma for these things, which means kids are much more willing to talk about it. So some people think that the numbers of people having these complaints is up. It is, but it might not be as up as much as we think because we're much more willing to be open about it than we were in the past. So you talk to these kids and you sort of try to tease out the extent to which these feelings are separate from the way they used to feel, whether these feelings are persistent as opposed to just a sort of moment in time that they happen to be seeing you. You're going to look for a family history of psychiatric disorder. They're not 100% genetic, but there's a strong genetic component. That's even in adoption studies where you know the genetic history of the kid, but they're not being raised by the parents who are depressed. So it looks like it's not based on behavior. And then you're going to look at what in their life could be changed in addition to prescribing a medication. And in the end, it's ultimately up to the parents because they are the guardians or whoever the primary guardian is, and it's up to the kid. We can't force a kid to take a medicine, nor does anybody want to do that. So instead, we're going to talk with them about the pluses and minuses of this.
Mm. And what are some of the side effects of these SSRIs?
Sure. So the most common are a little bit sick to your stomach, some nausea, and also insomnia. Those are the ones you hear about most often about. There's also sexual side effects, which often don't get talked about in part because people might feel a little bit uncomfortable talking about them. Really important to talk to a teenager about it because it's less normalized with a teenager. So they might not tell you, but they'll notice that change. So if you can sort of beat them to it and say, hey, if this happens, let me know because there are changes we can make about it. Additional side effects, one of the callers mentioned weight gain. That's a possible side effect. There are some people actually get more tired instead of less tired. Sometimes people have decreased appetite on them. It's a very individually derived thing, meaning that different people respond in different ways. So you have to sort of look for those side effects, but I would keep an open mind with what people bring to you. And if they're experiencing something, they're usually right about it, and you can at least think with them about it. The other one I didn't mention, which is pretty routine, is headache. Headache, stomachache, nausea, those usually go away in the first 5 days to a week.
And one of the reasons we're talking about this today with you, Doctor, is because the new head of the new secretary of the Department of Health and Human Services, RFK Jr., has critiqued these drugs and, for example, said that they were that they can be addictive, as we heard in a clip at the top of this segment. Is there evidence that these antidepressants are addictive?
There's not. There's evidence that there's a withdrawal, which is not the same thing as saying they're addicted. Addicted means that you get a craving for a different psychological experience at the moment you take it. So it tends to be medicines that or illicit substances that work right when you take them and that go away quickly when you're not taking them. That's what actually what leads to the addictive potential for them, because you start craving it and it goes away fast. There are folks who withdraw from SSRIs, and that happens more often with the ones with longer half-lives or shorter half-lives, excuse me. So medicines like Celexa or citalopram are much more likely to provoke withdrawal than is fluoxetine or Prozac. And that's just because the longer the half-life, the less steep the slope as it's leaving your body, so you don't experience the absence of it. Those withdrawal symptoms tend to be kind of flu-like symptoms. And again, they're manageable with Tylenol, ibuprofen. I don't mean to minimize them. They feel lousy, but they are not dangerous. The association with heroin withdrawal, I just don't understand it.
Who are the other people in our community who are able to prescribe these and sit down and talk with people, parents and kids, about the use of antidepressants? Is it just psychiatrists?
No, not at all. Thank you for asking. That's a really important point. There's not enough child psychiatrists in the first case. And in the second case, these are a common part of being human. Not everybody has them, but enough folks have them that this is something that primary care docs are very tuned into. So for kids, that means pediatricians, adolescent medicine docs, and family medicine docs. They're increasingly comfortable with prescribing these medicines. In addition, there are psychiatric nurse practitioners. And also in the state of Vermont, there's some other professionals such as, I think, naturopathic docs can as well.
Mm. You mentioned that there are not enough child psychiatrists. I saw that the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry actually tracks those numbers, and it seems to be a particular issue, unsurprisingly, in rural parts of the United States, including in Vermont. Six of Vermont's counties don't have any child psychiatrists, according to the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry.
Yeah, no, this is correct. It's been an issue since I've been in this discipline, and I finished my child psychiatry fellowship in 2000. It was an issue before that as well. Child psychiatrists tend to live in urban areas, Chicago, New York, Boston. Weirdly, interestingly, the American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry looked at the state-by-state numbers per folks who need it. Vermont actually was one of the few states, that in the District of Columbia, that seemed to be in good stead. But then when you break it down by counties, as you just referenced, it's Chittenden County, where we're still drowning, as you probably know, meaning we're doing our best, and maybe a little bit down around Brattleboro Retreat and a little bit over by Hanover. But generally speaking, we're in some trouble.
So the importance of these close connections with a psychiatrist or somebody else who can prescribe these medications, it's not just to get the prescription, but to have somebody you trust, a provider who can have these conversations with over time, not just in one visit. We got an email from a listener named Tracy in Waitsfield who writes, "It seems that there are few clinical guidelines and almost no research about how to get off SSRIs and SNRIs. I have known many people who have experienced terrible side effects while tapering off with little guidance from their clinicians. Why is that?"
I can't say why their clinician didn't give them guidance, only because there should be guidance. There's a lot of research about this. It is well known, well understood. Whenever you're tapering somebody from these medicines, first of all, you taper it. And then second of all, you can decrease the rate of the taper if they're starting to have side effects. It's nearly impossible to not have some kind of side effect with any medicine. That's the nature of medicines. But you can really mitigate those experiences. I'm sorry that the caller's friends had that experience.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Tracy, for writing in. Let's go to the phones here. We have Maya in Montpelier calling in. Maya, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. So I just wanted to share my experience growing up in Vermont as a a young adult with major depressive disorder. I was diagnosed when I was 12 years old and worked with both my family doctor and a couple of really fantastic child psychiatrists as well as therapists to try out different medications. I did end up trying most major SSRIs as well as some SNRIs and tricyclics. And unfortunately, none of those options did work for me, but I just did want to shout out that with proper information and care, I still felt very heard and informed in that process. I think that I would never advocate for a situation where people weren't afforded those options, because I also know plenty of people who benefit greatly from SSRIs, including young adults. So even though it didn't work for me, I'm still a huge advocate for that availability and that process. And particularly in Vermont, I felt my experience was very good. Particularly at UVM, I found was very, very helpful. So thank you.
Maya, thank you so much for sharing your personal experience there. Dr. Schlossman, what are your thoughts listening to Maya?
Well, my first thought is I'm glad you're feeling better, Myra. It sounds like you're feeling better. And if you're not, I hope you feel better soon. So you mentioned something really, really, really important. It is true that not everybody will respond to these medicines or respond as much as we'd like them to. They won't get as better as we'd like them to. But having a place to go talk about it, having a place to let folks know how you're feeling, to know that something can be done about something, that's hugely therapeutic. And one of the worries we have is that if the stigma against mental illnesses starts to creep up again, as it was in the 80s and the 70s, will we return to that lack of access that we've actually gotten a lot better at in the United States? We have a long way to go, but we're a whole lot better now.
Yeah. Let's take another call. We have Peter, also in Montpelier. Peter, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. I wanted to express how I use Prozac in the same way that if you repeat an action, such as learning an instrument, you've developed nerve bundles around that. You know, there's a physical side to memorizing, playing a song, perhaps. And I want to say that I use Prozac in the same manner, temporarily. Say I took it for, say, like a year. And, you know, under the theory that I could develop better mental habits and grow neural bundles around those better mental habits. And then I stopped using Prozac and continued, you know, experiencing the benefits of having retrained my mind to, you know, not go too far down.
Peter, that's a really interesting way to look at the use of these drugs. Dr. Schlossman, what do you think of that?
First of all, I'm glad it's worked for you, Peter.
Yeah.
And the you mentioned neural bundles. We don't know that that's exactly what's happening. We do know that antidepressants appear to improve what's called neuroplasticity, or the brain's ability to remodel, which is kind of what you're talking about. What we also know is that you can do that without an antidepressant, depending on how severe your depression is. And that severity is really on an individual basis. So one person's severe depression might not be another person's. So usually the way we think about this is there's a combination approach where you help to kind of even the playing field with the antidepressant, and then folks start to work on those habits. There are some folks who then can come off of the medicine, and there are some folks who don't do so well off of the medicines. And hopefully your prescriber says to you, hey, you've been on this for about a year, which is usually the advice. Let's think about coming off of it. And if you do, there's usually about a 50% chance of a relapse, which is their fancy word for just saying you get depressed again, within the next year. And some people will say, I'd really rather stay off of it. Some people will say, I'm not going to stay off. I'm going to stick with it because I don't like feeling this way, you know, this badly. What the neural bundle piece, that's one of the theories that has to do with the neuroplasticity that seems to be increased with the SSRIs and with, I should mention, psychotherapeutic interventions as well.
Hmm. Let me read a couple emails here. Nick in North Bennington writes, RFK Jr. is our new head of Health and Human Services. RFK Jr.'s supposed anecdotal evidence doesn't have any merit in the discussion of SSRIs. He's not a psychiatrist. Thank you for covering the fact that any medical or psychological care provided to a child is always in consultation with professionals and parents or guardians. We also got an email question from Jim in Waterbury, who is wondering if you, Dr. Schlossman, can address mood stabilizers. Jim writes that they were once prescribed SSRIs and had negative side effects, but then was prescribed a drug called Lamictal,
yeah.
I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly,
yep.
Which did wonders for Jim. I know that mood stabilizers are also under scrutiny by Robert F. Kennedy Jr., they write.
So mood stabilizers are the general term for pharmacologic agents, medications that are used to manage mood instability associated with bipolar disorder. So, and bipolar disorder, it sounds just like what it means. There are two poles here. So you have a super high state, a kind of a manic state, and a super low state, a depressed state. Most bipolar disorder, I just want to stress this, is not that sine wave that I just described, that high and that low. It's this kind of mixed state where you feel like you have a lot of energy, but eventually start to feel dysphoric, feel lousy. The mood stabilizers are more effective for people who feel depressed with bipolar disorder, are in that low state. And Lamictal or Lamotrigine, the medicine that's worked for, I think it was Peter, sorry, those are incredibly.
Jim.
Or Jim, I'm sorry, yes. Jim, sorry.
No problem.
They're incredibly effective. It's an incredibly effective agent. It's one of the first mood stabilizers that treats bipolar disorder from below. What we'll often find is if you give somebody an antidepressant and they happen to have bipolar disorder, which is present in a whole lot less people, like 1% of the population as opposed to 14 to 20% of the population for depression, you'll make them worse. You'll make them agitated. You have to watch that agitation because a lot of people feel a little activated, a little energized on these antidepressants. If it persists, though, or if it's very severe, then you need to change to a mood stabilizer. And there's a whole other class of medicines there, which I'm happy to talk about, but it's a long list.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's take one more call here, actually. We have Kevin in Brattleboro calling in. Kevin, we only have about a minute left, so I'll ask you to be brief.
Okay. Can you hear me, first of all?
Yes, yeah, we can.
Loud and clear.
Perfect. Okay. So I've had that wonderful depression thing since, you know, age 13. Got on SSRIs around 18, and they kind of helped, but then they lost their effect. I also did Lamictal, which has been pretty good, generic name Lamotrigine. But we figured out that the drugs weren't doing much at all for me, and there's another treatment that is outside of this realm. It's a ketamine treatment. There's another version called Spravato, but you do like 2 or 3 doses a week for like 6 weeks, and then you're pretty much good for a year.
Kevin, thanks for calling in. We might have to save ketamine treatments for another day, but I do want to note that those are not, since we're talking about child psychiatry right now, those aren't approved by the FDA for children. Are they for adults?
They are.
Yeah.
Great. And you would want to go to a specialist.
Yeah. No, well, Kevin, thank you so much for sharing that experience, especially the fact that your depression began when you were a teenager and you've tried different approaches over the years. Dr. Schlossman, that seems like a through line for this conversation
absolutely,
today.
Absolutely. Absolutely. If you get it right the first time, you're really, really lucky.
Yeah. Lastly, we've talked a bit about the importance of long-term care, as Kevin just brought up on the phones, and also the community support that is needed for our children and young adults facing so many challenges today. I'm wondering if you could speak directly for a moment to parents of kids and teens who are going through a hard time right now and maybe are just starting these conversations with a medical provider and psychiatrist about potentially prescribing an SSRI for their child, but might be feeling concerned based on the headlines that they're seeing. What would you say to them?
So you first of all, you would adjust what you say based on where they are age-wise and developmentally. Little kids are going to have this conversation with you in a very different way than teenagers are. But in either sense, addressed as a function of the developmental stage, giving them autonomy. So you're here. You're talking to me about it because I'm the clinician. I'm going to write for this thing. I want you to know what's going to happen when you take it. Can you swallow a pill if you're younger? A child, because sometimes they can't always do that. As they get older, what will you do to remember to take this medicine? So sort of helping them to feel responsible for it. And then most importantly, you mentioned parents, community. You, the child, you need to work on this with me. This isn't just taking the medicine. It just doesn't work that way. you need to work on these things, establishing those mental patterns that one of the other callers mentioned. That's going to help you to get better. And we're in this together. We're parents, kids, doctors, we're going to follow you together. We're going to get you better.
Dr. Steven Schlossman is the chief of child psychiatry at the University of Vermont Medical Center. Doctor, it's been such a pleasure having you on. And there's so much more to talk about on this subject of kids and young adults' mental health. We'll have to have you back on soon.
I would like that. Thanks for giving me the opportunity.
Yeah.